Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello there, treasured and beloved Monkey Tennis listener. It's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just to say that we're coming to the end of our episodes for 2017, but I think we might have saved the best for last. Thank you so much if you've been listening throughout what's been our longest ever series as we tackled iPartridge, a little bit of Mid-Morning Matters, and Knowing Me, Knowing Yule. But this is the big one. We finally got a member of the cast to come and join us live on stage. And whilst we've heard from several people involved in the making of I'm Alan Partridge and all the Alan Partridge projects, it's the first time we've had one come and join us. So a huge thank you to Mr. Simon Greenall, who came along to the Prince Charles Cinema in front of a live audience and gamely answered all the questions we flung at him about Alan. We also learned a lot about Admiral Nelson, which you'll hear shortly. Just so that makes a bit more sense, there was obviously some chat in the Knowing Me, Knowing Yule section about various historical figures and their disfigurements, which Simon picked up as he came on stage. So that's about it. Thank you so much. If you've enjoyed Monkey Tennis, please do rate and subscribe on iTunes. The more five-star reviews we get, the more people we can end up in front of. It really is that simple. So thanks if you've already reviewed us. And if you haven't, please do go and pop one in. So here we go. The final episode of the year. Simon Greenall, Michael the Geordie, live on stage at the Prince Charles Cinema. A ho, ho, ho.
Monkey Tennis?
It's Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
And Christ.
Monkey Tennis?
Please, please don't take my chat away from me.
The cracker's on fire aboard the pool! Monkey Tennis?
My house is open, my mock-up house.
Monkey Tennis?
That is a very nice action.
Oh, pardon?
Monkey Tennis?
300k. 300k all we take is a sky.
3 years ago, hobnobs were probably the number one biscuit.
Ho, ho, ho! Monkey Tennis?
Anyway, that's the end of our dissection and discussion and celebration of Knowing Me, Knowing Yule. It's time to introduce tonight's very special guest. I'm equally excited and scared. Scared because this is probably one of the few people that can debunk all of our theories.
I don't know how long he's been here for. If he's like going, you guys are talking absolute bullshit, it's quite possible.
But also very excited because he has over 130 credits on IMDb to his name and is a celebrated actor, writer and voice actor as well. But unfortunately for him, we're mainly here to talk about just one of those credits. He's been many people over the course of his acting career, but most importantly to us, nose-picking, pier-jumping, Bob Dylan look-alike seducing, radio station security guard, hotel dog's body, BP garage attendant, and general work Geordie, Michael. Please welcome Mr. Simon Greenall.
Yeah.
That's not even my catchphrase. My catchphrase is, oh no, I sat on the bastard. After 30 years in show business, I get that.
What a legacy.
Right, hands up who likes Alan Partridge.
Not every hand going up here, quite interestingly. Have you guys gone to the wrong room?
Hands up who's got a girlfriend. That's usually about right. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, Simon.
Hello.
Thanks for coming.
It's a pleasure to meet you on this very stage.
Let's see if it's a pleasure to meet me as it goes on.
Well, I'm going to start with a big and pressing question, and we're going to work our way down. We've all got a couple of questions for you.
Lord Nelson, he was blinded in his eye. He wasn't blind in one eye. He was blinded in one eye.
Shot in the eye or something like that.
He lost his right hand, his right arm.
There we go.
Because when he swore the oath to be made a lord, the usher said, would you place your right hand on the Bible, my lord? So he put his left hand on. And he said, no, sorry, my lord, your right arm. He said, I'm sorry, that in Tenerife. And it's there. It's in... what's the capital of Tenerife? Oh, come on. It's in the north.
Top crowd.
I think it's San Juan. In the north of Tenerife, you can see Nelson's arm bone.
I expected to learn a lot of things tonight, but that was not...
No, that was not on the list.
Also, Napoleon was actually quite tall. It was British propaganda that made him short.
Oh. Myths.
He was slightly above average height for the time.
You see, now you're learning stuff. This is good. Didn't get
actually,
that
for much. More stuff.
Nelson,
you're learning
Nelson
more
was
stuff.
A bit of a short ass. If you look at Nelson's uniform, which you can at Greenwich, he's actually quite small.
My goodness.
Yeah, there we are.
I like it.
Let's keep it light.
We'll maybe come back to that in a bit.
Well, I have to start with probably the
of
most...
Of course, Nelson being the great reforming admiral. Well, he brings in... because most mutinies are to do with food and conditions in the fleet. And there had been a very big mutiny...
You're listening to the Mutiny Podcast.
So Nelson brings in reforms. He's a great reforming admiral. He brings in the standardised plate. Because most
so disputes
are about food.
Does anyone get the feeling that Simon doesn't want to talk about Michael the Jordan? I don't know.
More importantly, can we...
The standard... The standard naval plate of the period is where we get the expression a square meal from, because the plates were square, so they wouldn't roll about.
I did actually know that.
They also had a circular indentation, and the edge was called the fiddle. And if somebody had more food, they were on the fiddle. That's where those two expressions come from.
Can we do a spin-off podcast where you just teach me about history? I would turn up for that every week. I have to ask
Toe the line, and there's another one. Toe the line. Toe the line, because sailors were barefoot. Sailors were barefoot, and they had to come to a line. They had to come to a line to get paid. And if you hadn't behaved, you wouldn't get paid, so you had to toe the line.
Is Michael dead?
Is Michael dead?
Yes.
Thank you, good night.
Yes, he is.
Well, that's because there was some ambiguity. He was never found.
Of course, when Nelson died, he was sent home in a butt of Malmsey. They put him in a big vat of wine.
I mean, he died at sea, like Megatron.
I feel rude for interrupting now.
No, I don't know what to do.
If you could actually put your hands up, it would help.
Okay. Well, we're going to start.
We're going to work our way down the table. See, I was worried this would look too much like Simon was here for a job interview, but now it looks like we're at school.
Yeah.
when did you first know Michael was going
to
be?
You like to be punished.
Come back to that later.
Are you going to shit in a box and give it to me? when did you first know Michael was going to be an alpha papa? Was it decided right from the off?
What?
When was it decided that Michael would be part of Alpha Papa? Was that? Do you know if that was right from the off, or did they just gave you a call and said?
No idea. Next question.
Okay.
I don't know. There was talk about a film, there was talk for a long time about a film. Then Steve was doing various different projects, and then it became kind of much firmer. And then they said, yeah, there's going to be a movie, and are you available for the early part of 2000 or whatever it was?
Okay. So, was the decision of Michael's death, were you told this is the end, or did you decide I'd rather not continue?
No, nothing to do with me. It was only that he jumped off the pier.
Mm-hmm. Because I thought that was a survivable jump, but apparently not.
Because what happened with that was we did it on Cromer Pier in January. It was minus 11. Because if it had been minus 13, we wouldn't have had to go to work. We would have had the day off.
That's annoying.
It was minus 11. And I did the jump off the pier thing, and I was going to do it, and then they said, no, we're going to get stuntman. Stuntman's going to do it, so fine, stuntman did it. And then I went back to do ADR, which is additional dialogue recording, and I said, oh, can I look at the bit where I jump off the pier? They said, well, we haven't really got time. I said, please, can I look at the bit? I said, all right. So they showed me the bit where I jumped off the pier, and it was silent. I said, oh, can I just stick something on? Can I just stick one thing on? They go, look, we're running out of time. I said, please, just let me stick one piece on this. I said, all right, we're going to run it once. Okay. So, oh, shit.
So good.
And what it is that Michael hasn't thought it through. Michael hasn't put that through. It's completely impulsive. Yeah. It's spontaneous.
Brilliant. His mid-air
oh,
reaction.
Shit is like, oh, shit.
I didn't mean to do this.
There was another bit in the movie where Steve... But Steve has got this very... He's got a gift of just putting the cherry on the top. There's a bit where I'm driving the radio van. I have to drive the radio van through the police. And they said, oh, just do something. And Steve said, just do something. Just think of something. So we're driving along. I thought, oh, no. So I went, hey, coppers, I've got knee tax, knee insurance. I'm not wearing a seatbelt. And Steve said, yeah, let's do it again. But at the end, say, what are you going to do about it this time? Because that suggests that he's done it before. Yeah. Which is genius, and that's what makes that funny. That's what makes it really funny.
Yeah, so I think Michael was criminally underused in the film. I think he could have been used.
Wait, but
a lot,
you can't,
lot more.
You can't have too much of him.
I agree with
because
that.
Because he's
I think
a peripheral
even,
character.
Yeah,
and he tends to be a bit larger than life, and a bit slapstick, and a bit unpredictable.
You think too much would detract from the realism of the film? I was being serious.
Yeah, well, he might skewer the plot. You never know what he's going to do.
Very true, very true.
But a lot of people said, oh, Michael wasn't in it enough, but it was fine by me because I could go and do other work.
But I think we did all agree that I think Michael gets a lot of the best moments in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the good payoffs. Yeah.
There was one thing, when we were looking at earlier series and I, Man and Partridge and Know Me, Know You, there were some references in the commentary and things to a lot of it being quite a rushed writing experience and filming experience, people in the back of cars feeding lines and things like that. Yeah. Was the film very different, or was
the film was worse? Steve had just come from doing Philomena.
Oh, of course.
So he was kind of in a different place in his head, and it was very cold and very difficult. It always is, and we had a lot of actors coming in who had learnt the script. And the problem then is that we then go, yeah, let's not do that. Let's do something else. And they tend to go, I've learnt it. I've learnt these words. I go, well done. We're not doing them. and so people were getting a little bit freaky.
Okay.
Also, I think what had happened was that in the early bits of shooting, Steve was working with people that he didn't know, which is not a problem, but he prefers to, especially as it's improvised, he prefers to work with people who he knows he can bully.
Well, there's a reference in, I don't know if it's in the commentary or if it was an interview he gave where Cole Meaney was saying, well, I'm not sure about this line, I don't know if it's true, to Pat Farrell, and Steve was kind of like, well, it needs to be funny though, so there is that.
Well, Cole Meaney did he did very good Furious Look. He did that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He just sit there glowering
and be really
incredulous.
Sorry, Cole, we've had a rewrite. Right, show me the rewrite.
So if you don't mind, just to take it back to kind of Michael's origins, and then we'll get to Nelson after that.
Good.
So yeah, just to kind of take it right back to the start in a way.
Yep.
So I think Steve Coogan has mentioned that on quite a few occasions that you gave him his first break in comedy. So how did you guys first meet? How did that break come about?
That's very, very generous of him. we were at drama school together.
Right.
I was in the third year. He was in the first year. And I had a radio show on BBC Radio Manchester.
Right.
Called The Buzz, which was a student radio show, which was dire. It was absolutely dire. And we went on and did bits of sketches and comedy and stuff like that. But it was a great opportunity to go and eat in the BBC subsidised canteen, steal stationery and trying to get off with BBC girls. So we did a lot of that. Steve came and did some sketches, and he was brilliant. He was really brilliant.
Oh, okay.
And actually, he introduced a character that he'd come up with called Dave Lippard, who was a presenter. Who was a terrible presenter.
So like an early incarnation,
a very, very, very early incarnation of Partridge.
Okay. Mm. So I guess you guys obviously remain remained friends up to the kind of I'm Alan Partridge years. So then, did he offer you the Michael Parks straight away?
I'd seen him briefly since the end of college, and it was like, 10 years later. I think I'd bumped into him maybe once. But he didn't know that I was coming in for the part.
Oh, okay.
I came in for the audition absolutely stone cold. And with it being Amanda, it was, you know, properly prepared.
Yeah.
The character was called Michael, and he worked in a hotel. That was it. That was all you had. He was called Michael, he worked in the hotel, and he got on with Alan. That was the sum total of Amanda's bloody preparation for the character. So I knew that Steve would like the army stuff, so I made him army. And I was gonna make him Yorkshire. On the day, I thought, I'll make him Yorkshire. You know, a big Yorkshire bastard. All right, Mr. Partridge, like that, you know.
Yeah.
But in the morning, I'd been doing a voiceover for a Geordie character, so I thought I'd make him Geordie. But when I did him originally, he spoke like that. He was quite nice and clear, and I knew you could understand him. But his mic didn't keep cutting out. Like he was going through a tunnel. Can you hear me now? So last minute decision, I made him Geordie. I made him ex-army, which I knew Steve would like. And it was just to go on tape. Amanda wasn't there. It was just a casting assistant.
So you were kind of given free rein to do whatever you wanted with that?
Do whatever you want.
You had a name and that was about it.
And they said, what do you like about working at the hotel? And so you had to improvise. I said, I like the lassies and I like the food. And they said, what do you hate about working at the hotel? And I said, when we make the full English breakfast, we'll put it all out in the trays and that, and it looks lovely, and then folk come in and they just ruin it. So I think that might have tipped it. But it was Amanda's idea to make him unintelligible, to make him really strong Geordie.
Nick, you're up. Questions?
I didn't realise we were doing it like this. So
you don't have to take part. It's fine.
No. So did you?
And you didn't put your hand up.
Did you stay?
Put your hand up, Nick. Come on.
There we go. This is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hello. Did you stay in character as Michael, kind of between takes? Did you take it that seriously, or
fuck off?
He's done you.
Yeah.
But that's what Steve does with Alan's stuff, right? That's kind of what we do. different approaches. That's fair enough.
He does. But he's carrying the whole thing. He's carrying the whole show. He's in the zone and he drives the improvisation. You don't drive the improvisation. You stay back and you wait for what he does and then you respond. So it's reacting
as opposed to acting.
So you wait to see what he does. But also the great thing that he does is that there's nothing you can do that will throw him. Anything you do, nothing's out of bounds. There's a story that I've told before about when we did the scene at the party at the end with the Black Beauty party in his room. We had to come in and we had to because it's Amanda, it's chaotic. We had to come in and we had to rehearse on August Bank Holiday Monday. And I was really pissed off because I planned to do something. But we had to all go in and do more bloody improvisation. So we were all in this room. It was very, very hot. We were getting nowhere with the party scene. And I thought, oh, what I'll do, I'll just chuck a sort of like a verbal hand grenade in here. And I was talking to Kevin Eldon's character. And I said, oh, so where do you live? He said, oh, I live in London. I said, all right, does all the blackies not bother you? Which just to kind of I thought, let's say that, you know, something will happen. It just makes something happen. You need a piece of grit to make a pearl.
Got transferred to his line.
Which got transferred to him. Kevin Eldon wasn't that pleased, but
I was going to say it's one of the most caustic things I think he's ever said in any character.
What was, in terms of like the sense after it had wrapped and it had been broadcast, what was the feeling in terms of how it had been received and the longevity that it might have?
Well, we didn't know if it was funny or not. It's that thing where you've been so close to it. it's difficult to know, is it funny anymore? Because you've hammered away at the anvil of pain, trying to get it to work, trying to make it work, and you're improvising and you're changing. It's constantly changing. And the moment was when, it's what I call showing it to the mums and dads. If you're recording on a Friday, on a Thursday, late lunchtime, the techies come in, the cameras come in, and everybody else, lighting, or they all come in, and they watch the stagger through of what you've done that week. And they laughed. And normally that lot never laugh at anything. They're like,
so Easter, like, Island, job done by that point.
They're like Easter Island, yeah, statues. And we thought, oh, wow, they're laughing. And that was it. And then the audience laughed. And then the next recording, the green room was full of famous people.
Like Mick Hucknall, yeah, probably.
it was full of BBC execs and stuff. I thought, oh, all right, okay, this is a thing. This is good. This could be something.
Yeah. What are your kind of either favourite episodes or moments from the series?
I think the moment of genius is the sex in the dark.
Yeah, it's chocolate mousse.
Because it's very daring. It's almost like radio, and it's to dare to do no picture. There's no picture. It's just completely black, and it's also in our minds. We have to imagine what's happening as to whether she would like him to speed up or not,
or indeed move on to the other.
So I mean you'd never seen that before in a sitcom.
I have to put my hand up.
Yeah, go ahead. At the end.
Hello. That leads on quite nicely to the next question. One of my favourite bits, or the bit that makes me laugh, isn't actually in the series. It's an extra where you and Steve are corpsing because of that bit when he's got the chocolate mousse on his face. Was that the hardest scene to film in terms of corpsing, or were there any others that?
Because everybody says, "Oh, it must have been. You must have been laughing all the time." We weren't. It was miserable. It's hard. And I think it's the acid test of a comedy. If actors say, we had such a laugh making it, you think, right, that's not funny then. it's got to be hard. It's got to be tough. And there was no corpsing or laughing. Nobody went because we were constantly running out of time. So the pressure was on us to not dick about. And in that scene, it looks like I laugh first because the camera's on me. And Steve went first, but fortunately the camera wasn't on him. So it looks like I go first, but he went first.
There we go. Now we know the truth behind
now
that.
Now we know. Yeah. And also, I think it'd be quite nice to know, what do you think it is about Michael that's kind of endeared him to so many people and, you know, given this character so many people love?
He has a kind of innocence, I suppose, a stupidity, a kind of unearthly wisdom. I don't know. He's like a big sort of daft dog, really. That could turn vicious.
Yeah. This is something that we've debated quite a bit as well, the relationship between Michael and Lynn. Are they friends? Are they not friends? What would you say?
Well, I think there's a sort of a love triangle going on. they're both jealous of their time with Alan and Alan's attention. So there's a lot of that going on. And also, she's quite posh and quite correct, and really would sort of frown on everything that Michael does, because there was a bit where in the movie it didn't go in the end. Well, it did sort of, but I had to come out to the front of the radio station, and Lynn was going to come up the steps. So I came out and I thought, oh, Lynn's coming towards me. I thought, I know what I'll do. So I put my fingers on my nose and blew the snot out my nose like that as she came up the steps. And she did a brilliant look as she went past me. And then Alan comes, and then I did that. Then Alan comes up and Steve shook my hand. Because I thought that was another touch of genius. He just says, hello, Michael. Oh, hi, hiya. But it's that thing where Lynn is horrified and disgusted by Michael, and obviously thinks she's a bad influence on Alan, and Michael just sees her as a an interfering old badger.
On the DVD commentary, I think it's Armando and it might be Steve, I'm not sure, were suggesting that Michael may not have actually been in the army and that the entire thing is a fabrication. Yes. Did that come up much?
No, it didn't come up at the time, but I think it's really funny. It's really funny because I think in the book it says we've searched every regiment in the British Army.
Yeah. Yes.
We can find no trace of him.
And I went back once I'd seen that on the commentary and sort of looked at a lot of the army in quotation mark references, and I did think, these could all be feasibly made up. There's nothing in there that sounds like absolute specialist information.
Yeah, they're knowledgeable enough.
Yeah.
I mean, if he'd been in Nelson's Navy, it'd be a different story.
Tell us more.
We're about there again. Yeah.
Was Michael being in the army then your, like...
Yeah, it's my invention.
Yeah, yeah.
Because also, it gets...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, Armando added the twitching and stuff and the sort of PTSD element.
Which would indicate he has been in the army thinking about it, yeah.
But the reason that I chose the army was that I used to work for a builder's merchant and our drivers were all ex-army. Mm. And unless you told them exactly what to do and in what sequence, they would just be gone. And, you know, you'd be going, where is he? It's 7 o'clock at night and he's still not back. I'm in a lay-by. Because you didn't say don't go in the lay-by.
Obviously, we're all here kind of, you know, ultimately kind of celebrating Alan. I'm sure most of us watch it quite regularly. But obviously, being part of it, do you find that, you know, you have obviously a very different relationship with it? Is it something like, you know, if the book comes out, you'll read it? Or do you still watch it? What's your kind of relationship with it now?
No, I don't really have an awful lot to do with it. I do Partridge Evenings. I host some quizzes. Which I'm actually about to stop because it's a bit weird, it's a bit odd.
And then you get asked to come and do things like this as well.
Yeah. So,
we've caught you just in time.
It is a little bit like, my mum thinks you're great and I remember you when I was doing my O-levels. It's stuff like that. And you think, okay, what else have I done in 25 years? It's a little bit of living off your past, which I don't particularly like. But the quizzes are good fun. Mm-hmm. They're funny. And then the level of knowledge is unbelievable. We were doing one at the Moth Club in Hackney, and we had a tiebreaker situation. And two teams come on stage, mostly chaps like you.
I feel like that's not a compliment, by the way.
Athletic, well-travelled.
It's like a team of five and a team of six. The tiebreaker question was, what price was the Sunday roast dinner as you drive into the Linton Travel Tavern?
Ooh.
This guy put his hand up.
I've got no fucking idea.
This guy put his hand up. I said, no, hang on, think about it. He said, no, I know. I said, you can't know. He said, I do, I know. I said, all right, then what? He said, £4.20. And so I turned to the guy running the quiz and went, he's bloody right. And it wipes across frame. Yeah. But yeah, their level of knowledge is unbelievable.
And it's been a topic on Mastermind and Celebrity Mastermind as well. So
yeah, which
it
is
runs
weird.
Deep.
Yeah. But we did a they had a Partridge weekend in Manchester.
there's not an awful lot to do in Manchester. They had a Partridge Weekend, and they had the car. They went and bought the Rover.
Yeah.
They bought it and did the spray paint down the side.
I mean, we've talked about doing that, but we were never really going to do it, I think is the difference there.
50 quid's 50 quid, isn't it?
Would you say it's fair to say that whilst Alan has progressed and evolved, especially from the series to the film, that Michael is a constant, that he hasn't, that there's not as much or any development in terms of what he's up to?
Yeah, Michael as a character hasn't really got the scope to move on. He's always going to be in a menial job, isn't he? I thought at one point, what would it be like if Michael won the lottery or something like that, and then had lots of money and then blew it or something, I don't know. But
would watch.
Yeah, can we get that spin-off show commissioned? Let's bring him back from the dead.
But no, I think his status is such that's about as far as he's ever going to go. Mm. Anyway, he's dead now. Anyway,
yeah, it's literally as far as he's.
Well, have you read Nomad, the most recent book? Because in that, there's a section where Alan's trying to write a coded message to Michael in case he's not dead. So I think maybe he's not written off.
Right.
But if you feel the same, that's fine.
And Tom, I'm sure you'd know best.
Really?
trying to get a scoop.
You can edit this bit. Really?
We heard that in commentaries that you would take part in boxing matches between shooting days.
Oh, yeah. I got smacked right in the eye just before a recording.
They have to layer the makeup on.
Yeah. What happened was they'd changed the schedule, and I had a fight that I couldn't get out of. It was a pub. it was a boxing match. And so I went. It was on. I think it was on Thursday night. Yeah, it was a Thursday night. It was a three rounder, and I went. And I thought, okay, I'll duck. I'll stay off. And I was doing quite well. And I just came in and caught a left, which hit me square in the right eye, and my eye came up and went black. So I managed to get it down with some arnica. Some arnica brought it down and some ice, but it was still black. But then I ducked in. On the day of recording, and went straight into makeup. And they went, "Oh, what the?" I said, "Please, no, don't mention this. What can we do? What can we do?" So they coloured it out. But I mean, it's something that Michael would turn up with a black eye anyway.
Yeah,
it's entirely plausible. It is fitting. Yeah.
I think we're almost running to the end. We're running out of time, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
This mic is on, is it? We were going to.
Hello.
I was going to be a roving reporter and walk into the audience to see if anyone had any questions.
Yeah,
that
go
they
on.
Wanted
who was
to
ask a question? But anybody?
Anybody wants to shout out?
You can shout out and we'll repeat it on
about my Nelson.
There was a chap over there.
It's not about Nelson. Ah. With the Apache helicopter monologue you did, how much of that was improvisation? How much of that was planned?
How much of the Apache helicopter?
All of it, apart from. Apart from who's Tom Donaldson? That was Peter Bainham. But other than that, it was mine. Peter Bainham said right at the end said who's Tom Donaldson?
We had a question emailed in actually as well from Rob Dinsey, who I think might be here tonight. So Rob asks. I'm going to read it out, Rob, even though you're here, so cheers. Given that Hollywood will reboot anything these days, it can't be long before we get to see a Michael the Geordie origin story. So who would you like to see play the younger Michael, and what traumatic events would it portray to lead up to his employment at the Linton Travel Tavern?
Oh,
good questions, Rob.
Okay, who's going to play the younger Michael? I don't know. I don't know any young actors. Funnily enough, I don't really like young, funny actors. I don't know who would play me. I don't know.
Any audience suggestions, maybe?
Yeah, somebody. Any? Lord or Mandela? I don't know. The early life of Michael. Yeah, might be interesting because he would have been in Northern Ireland, and he would have been potentially in the first Gulf War. Would he? No. It would have been in Northern Ireland, so it could be good.
Again, would watch.
Coming to a screen near you soon.
I feel like we should probably end by asking your favourite historical fact or story. It seems only fair to finish as we began.
Or is there any possibility, opportunity, chance that we'll ever see Michael again? Or do you think that he's consigned to the...
I don't know, because... Steve's doing a new series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But which is kind of a take on the One Show, I think yeah. Is the line that they're going for.
Yeah.
And I can't see a place for Michael in that.
So I'd love to see him as a roving reporter. Yeah. That'd be great. Michael is the man on the street. Yeah.
The only way I could imagine it is if it was a setup similar to the Larry Sanders Show or something, where it's a bit in front of the camera and a bit behind it, but I don't know if that's what they're going for.
Well, the idea of Michael being a roving reporter would have been ridiculous 20 years ago, but now, with all the speech impediments that there are on live broadcasts, I'm sure it'd be absolutely fine.
Coming to a rolling news channel near you soon.
Any more questions?
Any more questions?
That you want to shout out?
At the back.
You're going to have to shout loud.
What was going on in Michael's house?
What was going on in Michael's house?
The housemates, the spoon.
Around the cup of beans.
It was one of those houses that you go straight in. There's no porch or hall. You go straight into the front room. And it's one of those houses where... kind of dispatch riders and builders live. It was in Norwich, and it was a really scary place, really scary little bit of Norwich. Who are you fucking looking at? There's a lot of that. But Michael was watching telly, wasn't he? He was watching a programme about the triads.
Yes, yeah.
The big guy, I don't know who the big guy was, he just came out the house. No idea. It might have been his house. But I think it was near a pub called the Plasterer's Arms, which is always, you know, a good sign. Oh, look, there's a pub called the Plasterer's Arms. I bet it's lovely.
Yeah, pop in there for a pint.
Sounds wonderful.
Any more in the room?
One at the front.
Go to the front.
Would you do a Michael and Tex roadshow?
Yeah.
Actually, there's a bit with Tex that was cut out. Because Tex, he likes all American things. It was that. And... There's a bit that didn't make the cut where Alan said, "So, what's your favourite state?" He said, "Well, it's Texas." He said, "Michael, what's your favourite state?" Pissed. But it didn't make it.
Oh, that's amazing.
I think also in that episode, there was another bit that didn't make it. Was an argument between Michael and Alan Partridge about whether I had or hadn't ever seen News at 10. You've never seen News at 10. I've never seen it. No, you must have seen News at 10. I've never seen it. So, yeah, that didn't make it either.
Oh, man. Well, any other questions before we wrap up?
Oh, you know how to call beans before, man? Oh, hey. So, Michael, special. I'll have put a sausage in there.
Favourite historical fact or educators? Educators.
Anything else we should know, yeah. From history.
The origin of laughing your head off, which we've been doing tonight.
You're so kind.
The last man to be beheaded in Britain was the Earl of... the Duke of Athol, the Earl Fraser. And he was a Jacobite, and he was going to be beheaded. And it drew a very big crowd. A lot of people wanted to come and see it. They sold a lot of tickets. So they had to build an extra platform and an extra area for people to stand and watch him being beheaded. And as he came out, this platform collapsed. A lot of people were killed, and a lot of people were injured, and their feet were sticking at the wrong angle and stuff like that, which made him laugh like a drain. Even as he leant down to have his head chopped off, he was still laughing at the people who'd come to watch him get his head chopped off and had been injured or killed.
Well, and on that bombshell... I think we've got one thing left to ask you.
Yes.
If you would,
here we go.
We'd love for you to pull all this giant cracker with us for Christmas.
Oh, sure.
Marking the official start of Christmas.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness, it's very unwieldy.
I don't know if we're just... I think we should just leave it to you two. This is going to be too...
We're there by proxy.
Yeah. There we go.
Right.
Let's count down.
Hang on, the joke's just fluttered out.
It's a metaphor for my life.
Do you guys want to get a countdown for the...
So, look.
Oh, here we go.
I've got my specs. Why did the cracker joke writer give up writing cracker jokes? Because he thought it was beneath him. It wasn't what he trained for. There was a pointlessness to the whole thing. What's the point of this? I had serious ambitions and wanted to write my first novel. Oh, the despair, the emptiness, the hollow, hollow emptiness.
Nice.
Good, isn't it?
So, do you guys want to give a countdown for the giant cracker pool?
Oh yeah, please do count down from 3 to 1 if you would.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
And on that bombshell, it's the end of Monkey Tennis Live. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to Simon for joining us. Really appreciate it. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Good night.
Thank you.
So there you go. The man, the myth, the Michael. Thanks once again to Simon Greenall for donating his time to the Monkey Tennis cause, coming and sticking around afterwards to get photos with as many Alan aficionados as possible. We had a fantastic time. Thank you so much if you came down to that show too. So that's it for us for 2017, but there is a bit more Alan for you before the year's out. Don't forget that there is a special anniversary documentary about Alan Partridge with many familiar faces. It's going to be on BBC Two, and it's on the 27th of December at 9 p.m. So do check that one out. Several of Team Monkey Tennis will be tuning in. Maybe we'll even tweet along live. Who knows? Speaking of which, we're on Twitter, obviously, at The Partridge Pod, facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, thepartridgepod@gmail.com, or Instagram, it's Monkey Tennis Pod. Just once more to say thanks so much to everyone who's listened, subscribed, tweeted, emailed, berated and confused us this year. We started this just a bit of fun. It's so heartening and we have such a good time putting it together. So thank you so much if you've listened this year. Please do recommend us to Alan inclined friends as well. We're always on the lookout for more listeners, and it's fair to say that we will be back in 2018 tackling more of Alan's projects, potentially doing a lot of mid-morning matters, looking at the specials, and obviously there are those rumblings of a brand new Alan show which we will be duty bound to cover. Thanks once again, and have a wonderful Christmas and New Year. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, thanks and goodbye.
Monkey Tennis? It's knowing me, knowing you, with Alan Partridge.
And Christ.
Monkey Tennis?
Please, please don't take my chat away from me.
The cracker's on fire aboard the pool!
Monkey Tennis?
My house is open, my mock-up house.
Monkey Tennis?
That is a very nice action.
Oh, pardon?
Monkey Tennis?
300k. 300k all it takes is a sky.
3 years ago, Hobnobs were probably the number one biscuit.
Ho, ho, ho!
Monkey Tennis?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.